Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea. I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in to the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare technology. Our mission today is simple. We're searching for beneficial disruption in healthcare from emerging technologies. I'm very excited today that my guest I'm in North America, he's in Europe, and it's going to be Dr. Ji Lo. He's the Chief Medical Officer at Blockchain Health and Center for Personalized Medicine. I had a good conversation with him a couple of weeks ago, and really been looking forward to this deeper dive. Dr. Ji Lo is a cardiac surgeon. He has a demonstrated history of working in the computer software industry. He's an expert in medical devices and virtual currencies, and the first person I've ever met who holds a Master's of Science degree in digital currency from the University of Nicosia. Dr. Ji Lo, thanks for joining me and our audience on this episode of the Tate Chronicles today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for that very, very flattering introduction.
Well, and thank you for the work you do in this space. One thing I always like to ask folks, how did you first get interested in blockchain at all? What turned on the light bulb for you? What was your first exposure?
So, it's rather I would say it's not a simple story. I mean, I've always had some interest in technology and things like that because of some very early exposure that I had as a result of a family member. And my very first exposure to it, I think if anybody remembers the sort of the blog called slashdot.org, which was a sort of technology blog where all of the interesting sort of technology discussions were happening, things that were new and things like that. So that, I believe, was that back in about 2010, end of 2009, 2010. No, somewhere around 2009, actually, I believe. And that was the very first time I think I heard about it. I was also on a mailing list, not a technology mailing list, but a cryptography mailing list at the time. And there was a message, one of the original messages that had mentioned Bitcoin and this whole new space. So those were my first two introductions. It took me, I have to admit, maybe another introduction to it in the form of, I think, a radio podcast and also a video podcast that I had been listening to at that time. And the topic came up again, which at that point was, for me, all I needed to sort of, you know, ask this a second question, what's going on? And then to actually read this sort of Satoshi paper and download this software and to play with it. So that was my very first introduction. And I think I think the question you're really asking, though, is what is it that that made me not dismiss it right away?
Correct.
Right.
Yep.
I think I have to jump back a little bit further because let me just say that at the very beginning when I first installed the Bitcoin client and got free Bitcoin, fragments of Bitcoins from these various wallets, and were still handing them out for free at that time. And what I had found myself doing was installing it on the computer, installing another client on a tablet, and another one on the mobile, and I found myself, you know, just sending fragments of a Bitcoin from one device with one address to another device with another address, and for some reason it captured my fascination, and the fact that there was that this system, and I really understood nothing about blockchains at that time, but this system permitted any two individuals in a peer-to-peer fashion to at least have that type of communication, or to perform what was, you know, to perform a transaction, not really a transaction, but to transfer a digital asset to another person without somebody in between, which was very interesting. And then the other thing was that it was incredibly interesting to me in that this digital asset, they had not necessarily, they had introduced a brand new idea to me, was that I could be the custodian of my own asset. I did not have to give the ability, I did not have to hand over my asset to a custodian or a third party or a bank or this or that. So whenever that, those were the two main things that sort of hooked me. But whenever I saw that I was transferring them from one address on one device to another address on another device, and it was fascinating me, it reminded me so clearly of whenever I first encountered email.
Yes.
And what happened at the beginning, whenever I had an email in the early 80s, was that I received an email address. Nobody else had an email address except for my uncle. And I would find myself sending myself emails as a child, being fascinated about how this message could leave this, you know, this device with exactly how I had crafted the message, and it would arrive almost instantaneously at another address exactly how I had crafted it before, and I had immediate control over these things. So this was, again, sort of some instant, sort of very quick form of communication that I hadn't really seen before. And what I had started to notice as I saw the whole Bitcoin ecosystem sort of developing, it was the same that I had seen in the email ecosystem sort of developing. And that was that initially, there was no one to send a message to or to send Bitcoin to. And nonetheless, I had the same fascination sending them to myself. But what was even more interesting was that as time went by, there was the development of a network. And as more people joined that network, all of a sudden, email became much more useful. It was useless in the early 80s, but now we can almost not live without it. And what I was seeing was that Bitcoin was paralleling sort of the same sort of sequence of events, mm-hmm. where it was really, really interesting to me. I was just fascinated. And secondly, there was no network, so I would send them to myself and be fascinated about how it would work. And then slowly more people would join the network, and then you could start doing things with it. So it was the development of a network, a really cool technology. And if you throw, we're talking about blockchain and other kinds of technologies, but nonetheless, this digital asset, which is a completely separate topic, went from no way to discover what its real value was, to the point where there were, to today, where there are a number of markets so that price discovery is now possible. So those were the two big interesting things that just plain wouldn't let me put that paper down and wouldn't let me stop thinking about it. And the key thing was, at one point, very early on, I asked myself, why does this work when every other attempt failed in the past, at least with digital sort of assets? And that is what triggered this sort of examination and study of what we call, what many people would call blockchains, I would say.
Sure. And your experience, I think, is very similar to quite a few other people in that they first were attracted to the crypto aspects and then started pay attention to the underlying technology of the distributed nature of that technology. With your background in healthcare, did you start seeing how this could be applied to healthcare, whether it's health records or reimbursement schemes, or how did that happen for you?
So for me, that was – so I first of all, I realized, number one, that – so there is a cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, right? Every other attempt has failed before, right? And that, like I said before, made me ask myself, what is it that enables this to not die when everything else in the past has died before? And that really forces you to look at how does this whole communication and cooperation and collaboration work between the participants on that network. And so that's how I went from, I wouldn't say really went from, but I would say that's what led me to the next thought of what is underpinning this capability that seems to be fairly robust. And that's what we call the blockchain. Right. That's what the first Bitcoin was, essentially a proof of concept application, the first application built on a proper blockchain. Right. So what he actually did was he developed a blockchain and then he developed an application on top of it to prove that it works. It just happens to be that that's what we call Bitcoin today. But the fundamental innovation was actually the blockchain, to be honest with you. And I knew that there's something very special about having a message or a communications medium where you know that the messages are retained their fidelity under very... in a very robust way, under whatever you can imagine types of attacks, right? And for me, there was some desire to try to figure out very early on how could such a communications medium or a platform be useful in kind of the interactions that we have to have in the healthcare space. I knew that it would have to be there at some point, somewhere. However, I always have to admit, thought that it would be easier to implement in other domains or in other sectors, right?
Like
where
financial.
The problems are.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, because, finance is a natural place for it. Number one, most of the information that needs to be exchanged in finance has already been encoded in a digital format or in a digital manner, right? The second thing is, in finance, there are many issues of custody. Who owns what? Who is possessing something? What in finance for us with currencies is, you know, I only own a dollar if I actually have the dollar in my pocket. The minute I deposit it in a bank, legally, that dollar belongs to the bank. And they just owe me. I just get a note. So what this blockchain somehow enabled was the ability to retain custody of your own digital asset without being forced to give up control of it to a custodian, right? So on the healthcare side, it was kind of natural for me to think that blockchains may have a role, okay? And I think we still need to see that develop, but may have a role in if we are able to encode or encapsulate information in a digital form. And there are many areas where blockchains might be useful, but in particular on the data side, where the owner or the person or the entity that generates some information may not be forced to relinquish custody of that information. That was the one thing that I kind of thought about in healthcare. But to be honest with you, there are other areas. So, you know, healthcare has a lot to do with transfer of value, right? So, of course, sort of the whole cryptocurrency kind of thing. Healthcare has an awful lot to do with serialization, enumeration, all of those things. For example, you know, every patient has a medical record number in a hospital. There has to be an ID. Every drug, every bottle of aspirin or Tylenol has a serial number, so that things can be traced all the way back to manufacturer and before. So blockchains, which are very good at dealing with cryptography and cryptographic keys, which have enormous and essentially for humans, for the sake of humans, sort of an infinite sort of key space, are very good at dealing with and managing that kind of information. So ID, medical ID kind of systems. So we already have value transfer, we have medical ID systems. If you think about sort of the whole verifiable computing things that you see in the likes of Ethereum and a lot of other sort of projects that are running around, you can see that playing a role in sort of the submitting an application for not an application, submitting a request for approval from an insurance company for, let's say, this treatment based on this condition, and then have sort of the quote-unquote verifiable computing part of it or the smart contract part of it sort of in an automated way handle what the condition is, what the claim is, what the benefits will be. And if you think about the value transfer, handle the value transfer at the other end, right? And then there are so many other places where you could think that these kind of blockchain technologies might be able to have a role. In all honesty, healthcare, especially in, you know, the OECD countries, these large, fairly wealthy countries, healthcare in those jurisdictions are simply a microcosm of the economy at large, right? We have every single problem that the entire economy has, except that we represent, for example, in the United States, maybe, I don't know, 18-20% of the economy. Right. So I would expect that healthcare would have many places, many opportunities to exploit the key benefits of blockchains, the key capabilities of blockchains. However, I would also include the caveat that in many other industries, the essential and fundamental information that needs to be passed around and the processes that need to occur to allow those economies or these systems or these ecosystems to function, that information has already been encapsulated in a digital form, right? In a predictable digital form. And in healthcare, I think that's a little bit more Wild West-ish. It is very hard to extract the information in a doctor's letter in a way that it can be computed on.
Sure.
That has to occur.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Probably the closest thing we have to that is those interoperability files, the CCDAs. But they're just a bridge to what you're talking about, which is really electronic data.
But not just electronic data, because what we hear today is that, we have an electronic medical record system, and what they've done very often is that, oh yeah, we just received a letter from a doctor yesterday, their family doctor, and the only way they can include that information in the medical record, the electronic medical record, is to scan it and save it as a PDF.
That's correct. Unless the doctor who sent that information, very few would send one of the CCDAs that could be imported into the database, but that's not happening very much. But I want to make sure I get to a couple other questions I have for you here. It's interesting you talked about what you were first learning 9 years ago, things like that, and the first block was mined on the Bitcoin blockchain just over 10 years ago. So you've been thinking about this a long time, and you've seen the whole trajectory of this technology move forward. What are some of the current challenges you see to adoption, whether it's in healthcare or in some other field?
So there's several. I think we need some time to develop the imagination necessary so that we can focus our efforts into things that are going to be useful. If somebody had told me 30 years ago that I would receive an email less than a second after I swipe my credit card in a different country notifying me that a charge was made on my account, right, they would have thought that I was crazy if I had said something like that. There was no capability for people at that time, for us, to really, outside of just being fascinated that the message got there almost immediately, to realize how we would use it. So we need to really, you know, think about it and give ourselves some time to imagine how a blockchain might be useful in the future. And like I said, nobody would have imagined that 30 years ago, how we use email today.
Exactly. And kind of a metaphor I've been thinking about a little bit lately is when Steve Jobs introduced the iPhone, we didn't know it, but that day Uber was born. We just didn't know it. And so we can dream up all these use cases, to solve problems with blockchain technology, but there are opportunities that we don't even know about yet. So it's just going to be fascinating to watch that over the next decade.
Yeah, so that's one thing. So we need to sort of develop our imaginations. The second thing is that, at least in the pure blockchain kind of space, thinking about how it might facilitate certain processes in our economies, the truth is that it deals with data. It's about collaborating through data. And for it to be useful generally on a blockchain, it has to be information data that has been encoded digitally in a standard format that is computable, that we can compute on in an automatable way. So we just need to have the raw sort of, blockchains can only work on ones and zeros. I hate to say it, right? It can only work on ones and zeros. And we just need to adapt the way that we collect, generate, document, archive information so that what we want to apply the capabilities of blockchains to is there for blockchains to do work on, right?
Sure.
So we need to be able to get our information in a way that is suitable to do things with blockchains, right? That's the second thing. And then I think probably the most important thing, beyond the imagination and beyond making sure that the information, the data is there and available and accessible, is that there needs to be a really robust sort of examination of what blockchains can do and what are the features of a problem that would allow a blockchain to bring one of its key capabilities to a problem that is being inadequately addressed elsewhere. Right. So blockchains are good, like I said, they're good at managing keys. They're good at timestamping. They are good at knowing what happened before, what happened after, when did this happen. They're good. They're very good at these notarial tasks. They're very good at letting. And let me just say this properly. They are very good at allowing participants with diverse economic interests to collaborate through data. So, you know, if everyone is aligned, then you don't really need a referee or a tiebreaker, which mm-hmm. is one of the functions of a blockchain, right? So why would I try to build an application based on a blockchain for a problem or a situation where everyone agrees already?
Absolutely.
Right?
Well, and I think your comments there really, really sum it up. And unbelievably, we've already come to the end of our program. So first, let me thank the audience for joining us today on this episode of the Tate Chronicles. I offer a special salute to my guest, Dr. Shilo. Thanks for coming aboard today. You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors. Thanks so much, Dr. Shilo.
And thank you very much for having me. It was a wonderful discussion.
Thank you.